This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Cedarside. Cedarside's original 100% organic insect spray kills bed bugs, mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, mites, scorpions, roaches, and more, but is completely safe for your home, pets, and family. Go to cedarside.com, use coupon code Hoffman at checkout for free shipping, or call 800-842-1464 and mention you heard it here. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, in today's podcast, we're going to look at the fascinating world of the microbiome. That's a theme that we've taken up in several podcasts. We've talked about the relationship between the myriad inhabitants of your intestinal tract and immunity, allergy, gastrointestinal problems. There's even a brain-gut relationship, but today we're going to look at a very special relationship between the microbiome and body fat. The microbiome may have a major impact on metabolism, and that's the theme of a book by today's guest. It's called The Microbiome Diet. It's written by Dr. Raphael Kelman. Dr. Kelman is a good colleague of mine here in New York City. In fact, he is a fellow alum because we both went to Albert Einstein College of Medicine. He's an internist and pioneer in holistic medicine, and he's the founder of the Kelman Center for Functional and Integrative Medicine. So welcome, Raphael.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure having you. And so it's remarkable that Einstein graduated two doctors who both went into complementary alternative medicine, because most doctors kind of toe the line there.
More to come, Ron. Yeah. More to come.
Yeah, well, I think that's a great trend. Congratulations on the book.
Thank you.
Microbiome diet traces the relationship between the bugs that live in your gastrointestinal tract and your metabolic health, i.e., there may be a way that you can restore your gut health and achieve permanent weight loss. That's the promise of the book, isn't it?
Yeah, it's certainly one of the promises. And based on the reviews on Amazon, it seems like it's coming true.
Great. Well, so how did you get onto this? Because you describe in the book how you began treating patients, and then you noticed that there were remarkable results in terms of their ability to adhere to a diet and maintain weight loss.
Yeah, absolutely. I was very interested in the role of the gut, the gastrointestinal tract, in healing in general. A number of years ago, I wrote, actually it was my first book called Gut Reactions, and it was about how the gut plays such a central role in so many health issues, and that there's a brain in the gut, that it's not this kind of mindless tube that we were taught in medical school, that is that the gut is a blind tube and its sole purpose is
like a conduit, just a pipe
food, right? Like a conduit, right, that just mechanically chops the food down, and then like a good chopped up salad enters into your bloodstream. I mean, basically that was the model that you and I were taught in medical school. So I came to learn that usually what they teach you, and this is not just in medical school, is that what is dogma in one era, one generation, becomes what's absolutely false in the next generation. In fact, the opposite is true. So once I started seeing that that there's a brain in the gut, that it's not this brainless organ, to the contrary, then I started looking into the gut, that it must have very, very important functions in general. I was following the research that was coming out of gastrointestinal physiology research. And lo and behold, around 10 years ago, 8, 9 years ago or so, there was a lot of research coming out about the gut bacteria, that it's so vast. We all knew for many, many years that there's gut bacteria and they can overgrow, and you can have some, it can affect the gut, and it can affect other organs, the immune system, but we didn't really know the extent of it, that there was so many cells, so many bacterial cells in the gut, that they actually outnumber our own cells 10 to 1. And so we were learning over the last 10 years that there's really an organ, this is an organ of a huge population of bacteria that are not our enemies, but in fact They're our friends. They're an ancient ally that play a vital role in our health. They're like the grand conductor of our overall physiology. So this was a radical 180-degree turn from what we were taught, that the gut doesn't have much of a role to play with in general health, and that if there's bacteria, the bacteria are basically bad guys, and they only cause pathology, and they're virulent. And now, all of a sudden, just the opposite, that there's the microbiome, a huge entity that is composed of trillions of cells. They outnumber us 10 to 1. They orchestrate our overall health, and they are the good guys. And that's what we were learning about 10 years ago. So, and then I started applying that research clinically in different ways. I wanted to write this book around 8 years ago. Of course, it was rejected as ridiculous, that it couldn't be true.
Right, it was you were too far ahead of your time.
Yeah, it was 8 years ahead of the time. You know, when we first started doing this, yeah, I know we're kind of on the same parallel path. That we were 20 years ahead of our time. Now it's just around 8 or 9. But no one wanted to buy the book. And then I revisited it about two years ago. And then they were interested. They said, listen, it's not just about metabolism. It affects the brain, and it affects the immune system, and it affects, you know, the endocrine system, et cetera. I said, no, the only way that anyone would buy this if you focus on its impact on metabolism and obesity. And sure enough, that's what I did. And the research is astonishing in that it shows that it plays such a critical role. These gut bacteria that we thought were our arch enemy are actually playing a critical role in maintaining health, and they could be used. If we improve the microbiome itself, it can do an incredible job for us to improve our metabolism in ways that no drug can ever accomplish.
So what are the lines of evidence that suggest that there's a relationship between the species of bacteria or the balance of bacteria in your intestinal tract and weight? I mean, that's the bottom line, if you'll excuse the pun.
Right.
What scientific evidence shows that that's indeed the case?
Well, there's a lot of evidence. You know, there's evidence in terms of in their evaluation and understanding of the biochemistry of the physiology, that it's well outlined now that the gut bacteria, they actually influence our overall physiology, our metabolism, and genetic expression more than any other system in the body. In fact, most of the metabolites, meaning biochemicals that are produced, that are floating around, are actually signals. Most of them are signals from the gut bacteria. And there's plenty of evidence that they orchestrate our health and our metabolism and the immune system in its effects on genetic control, meaning actually turning certain genes on and certain genes off. They can turn on genes that code for anti-inflammation, and we know that inflammation is associated with weight gain, and anti-inflammation the opposite, associated with weight loss. There's plenty of evidence now that the microbiome, these gut bacteria, can actually turn various genes on that code for lipolysis, fat breakdown, and improvement in cardiometabolic parameters, improving fat metabolism, glucose metabolism, and improving the way the liver stores fat. And then there's studies on mice and on animals, and then there are studies on humans. And they all point in the same direction, that the gut bacteria, the microbiome, can improve our health, can improve our metabolism, and can help us with weight loss.
Well, to me, some of the most dramatic evidence of that is in this process called fecal transfer, which is actually becoming a way of treating certain gastrointestinal disorders like C. difficile diarrhea. They may use fecal transfer to save the lives of people suffering from debilitating diarrhea. But they also notice that when they do this with mice, they transfer from a fat mice to a skinny mouse. The skinny mouse becomes fatter,
right,
and vice versa. And
right,
the concern, I've even heard it said there's a concern that when they screen for human donors for stool in these cases where they're transferring stool, they want a lean donor because they don't want to make this person, this terribly right. sick, emaciated person, right. you know, cure them and then turn them into an obese person.
Right, right. Exactly. You know, in fact, I read somewhere that this woman claims that she gained an enormous amount of weight after a fecal transplant.
That would be a hell of a malpractice suit, wouldn't it be?
Right. It's right. It's opening up new doors here for opportunity for certain lawyers. But I can tell you, there's another concern that I have with fecal transplants is the effects it may have on your brain and personality
mm-hmm. yep.
and memory and brain function and mood and anxiety. I would be very, very leery in accepting a fecal transplant at the state that it's in right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because it has such profound effects on our overall health that we shouldn't underestimate its power.
Well, that brings us to the point is, you know, obviously one solution, you know, if the theory is true, you know, is go find a skinny donor and get some poop and put it in a poop pill and swallow it.
Ron, and a smart donor too.
A smart, non-depressed, non-anxious, et cetera, you know, with
right.
a good immune system and so on. But obviously that's impractical. It's, you know, and it's not
right.
advisable. So in your book, you outline steps, practical steps that people can undertake to modify their biome in a way that can be conducive to weight loss. So let's take a look at that process. You actually outline what are called the four R's. So why don't we go
yes.
into that?
Yeah, right. The best way to really improve the microbiome is to do it the right way. And, you know, like you're building a house, you got to start with the foundation and you got to work your way up. You got to really understand, you know, how to restore the microbiome and improve the microbiome. So first of all, you want to change your diet. Absolutely. You know, and it's not just, you know, removing processed foods and refined foods. The real issue is we have to think about what does the microbiome need to eat so that it becomes healthy and it becomes diverse and it can flourish. Very important question. And it may not be the types of foods that we think we like, you know, whether French fries and Coke and some chocolate cake. Believe it or not, when the microbiome gets healthy, one of the first things that I see is that our desires for certain foods rapidly changes, and it becomes more in line with what our microbiome really likes to eat.
Well, and there is some evidence that the microbiome seeks out and sort of commandeers your brain.
That's
you know,
right.
That there's actually some very interesting because sometimes people yeah. say, "Oh, the candida made me do it." You know, when I have candida, I crave sweets. And I used to look at them cross-eyed and say, "Well, you're just making an excuse. That's a cop out." But actually, there is evidence that
a
dysbiosis may foster cravings for the wrong foods.
Exactly. You know, we're frequently hijacked. Our brains are hijacked,
yep.
and our desires are hijacked. We think we want these foods, but we don't really want these foods. It's the overgrowth of certain unfriendly bacteria or bacteria overgrowth in the microbiome that's actually creating those cravings for us. That's its powerful effects on the brain. But once we start to follow the microbiome diet and we start eating the foods that really help the friendly, good bacteria, the microbiome proliferate, our desires for those foods that we thought is just encoded in our DNA, in our genes, begins to change. And all of a sudden, we're no longer fighting. We're no longer resisting the foods that we really want to eat. We start to want to eat the foods that will actually make us healthy and make us lose weight. And those are the foods that are outlined in the microbiome diet. And they involve both the use of foods that contain prebiotics, meaning that they help to feed the friendly bacteria, and they include foods that contain a compound called inulin, and it may be found in leeks, it may be found in jicama, in Jerusalem artichokes, and many other foods that I describe in the book. And then there's a class of prebiotics that contains another very important compound called arabinogalactans. That compound is found in foods like radishes and kiwi and many other foods, the larch tree. So what happens, you start to eat those foods, they begin to help the gut bacteria grow and diversify and proliferate and become healthy and robust. And then we can also add in some foods that actually contain the probiotics themselves. Those are fermented foods. Could be kimchi, which I think is an incredible food that it really improves our metabolism. Sauerkraut. It could be kefir for some people who can tolerate milk. There's also the concept of resistant starches that help to improve the microbiome, which is another classification of foods. And even just a few days on this diet, what happens is that your desires change, and you feel your brain begins to feel better. The weight loss then ensues, but without the struggle. One caveat. For people with a lot of bacterial overgrowth, like a lot of bloating and a lot of gas, et cetera, that they may have so much bacterial overgrowth, you have to be careful with the use of prebiotic foods.
Right, it can start to get really bloated and gassy and
Exactly. Exactly, and you certainly shouldn't at that point take the prebiotic supplements, because you could get inulin as a supplement, you can get arabinogalactans as a supplement. Should not be taken if you have a lot of gas, bloating, etc. You should first remove the overgrowth, and with certain herbs that I described in the 4R program. And so for some people, you have to do the remove phase and stick with that for a month before you do the other R's. There are 4 R's. So the first R is the remove. There are a bunch of herbs, many of which I describe in the book, that can reduce the bacterial overload. I look at it, Ron, as like pruning. You know, there could be overgrowth of certain bacteria that are affecting the whole. Like in a vineyard, sometimes you have to prune just a little bit of the crop so that the whole flourishes better. The same thing here. We may need to reduce the overgrowth of certain bacteria so that the whole microbiome will work better as a collective entity. And that's where these herbs come in that I describe in the book. That's the remove phase. You know, and the research shows...
What are some of the herbs that you favor?
Okay, so it could be... I like there's berberin, there's caprylic acid, there's grapefruit extract, Port Arco, you have wormwood, artemisinin. There are many different ones. I like this one called biocidin, which is a kind of a conglomeration.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, sometimes you have to also address what's called the biofilm. Sometimes it's a protective sheath around these bacteria. Sometimes you have to be a little bit more aggressive. That's a little bit beyond the scope of the book, but that's sometimes that we have to do clinically. And then, you know, for some, it's necessary to test for bacterial overgrowth. And you could do that with stool testing. I'm not a big fan of that. I tend to see better results from breath testing.
Mm-hmm.
But if someone can't do that...
So-called SIBO, small intestine bacterial overgrowth.
That's right.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, but if you have a lot of gas and a lot of bloating, then focus on the first R. If you can't get the breath test or the stool test, has done for at least a month without even considering anything else, reducing the fruits that you're eating and the beans, etc. And then you could
That's a little surprising because a lot of people think of fruits and beans as being healthy food. You know, but they tell us to eat a lot of fiber. So
right.
I mean, there's some unsurprising foods that you say get rid of, which artificial sweeteners, no problem. Trans fats, hydrogenated fats, of course, junk food. You know, get rid of that. Refined carbohydrates. But when you say, fruits and beans, a lot of people who consider themselves on healthy diets subsist on things like fruits
right.
and beans. But specifically single out beans because they have a certain property that is not desirable for leaky gut syndrome, I think.
That's right, and that's why some people are not feeling better, because they're eating the beans and the fruits and some other seemingly healthy foods, like you said, but they're also feeding the unhealthy bacteria. So that's why everything has to be done with very, very special care and consideration for the understanding the underlying process. So these herbs can certainly reduce that overgrowth, and then you go to the next R. Now, sometimes you do these R's concomitantly, and sometimes you do them separately. The second R is the replacement of enzymes. of sometimes hydrochloric acid. A lot of people are deficient in hydrochloric acid with all the stress we experience. The epidemic of hypothyroidism that we see today is clearly associated with low hydrochloric acid output. And
can affect intestinal transit. You know, constipated patients often hypothyroid.
Oh, unbelievable. You know, if you're hypothyroid, you have bacterial overgrowth. It almost goes hand in hand, even if you don't think you have any symptoms in the gut. I see it by doing the testing, the breath testing. So, and hypothyroidism is such an epidemic. But so you want to replace the enzymes and the hydrochloric acid when needed. The third R is the reinoculation, and this is where we use the probiotics, right? And prebiotics, which is what we spoke about before. Now, again, it could be used as supplements as well. The probiotics is an art and a science that's rapidly evolving now.
I'd like to focus specifically on that because
sure.
We divide our podcast into two parts. This is a good point at which to have an inflection point.
Sure.
Because there is talk of finding that it's like the Holy Grail, the weight loss probiotic, the probiotic that actually helps you lose weight. And while, you know, maybe that's a little in the future, we're beginning to hone in on certain species of probiotics that may actually help our metabolism and aid weight loss. So I'd like to save that for part two.
Sure.
We're talking to Dr. Raphael Kelman. His book is The Microbiome Diet, the scientifically proven way to restore your gut health and achieve permanent weight loss. And in part two, we'll focus on specific probiotics that research now tells us can support the metabolism. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine Podcast.